Hello, my name is Diana Dirkby, and I live with paranoid schizophrenia. Today I wanted to talk about the grey areas of stigma. Stigma is, of course, a big subject and, unfortunately, a big deal that anyone with a severe mental illness such as I have must confront in their life. The mental health advocacy groups, of which I've already spoken in this podcast, for example, NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, Bring Change to Mind, and the Schizophrenia and Psychosis Action Alliance, are wonderful sources of information about mental illness and severe mental illness. As well as that, there are individuals who have been very brave, and really it's one of the good byproducts of social media that they have felt comfortable coming out with what they actually experience as someone living with a severe mental illness, be it bipolar depression or be it schizophrenia. An example is the wonderful Michelle Hammer, who I have mentioned before in my podcasts. But there are many people that you can find now on social media who are talking about what it's like to live with a severe mental illness. So all of these things are what you may call education. They are raw facts about what it's like to live with a mental illness and what it's like to live with a severe mental illness, based in science and based in the experience of people who are consumers of mental health. They are wonderful for people who may want to support someone with a mental illness or a severe mental illness, and simply don't have enough knowledge to know how to help them. They also help the person living with a mental illness to understand themselves. I mean, it's great. I find when, you know, I go on Instagram, say, and then I read a post, and it's from someone who lives with paranoid schizophrenia and describes something which is exactly the same as I've experienced. It makes you feel supported. It makes you feel less alone. So it's all very good for people who are receptive, be they people who know someone with a mental illness or be they someone who live with a mental illness. Unfortunately, there are a lot of people who are just nervous about the whole topic. So I want to distinguish those people from those who just don't want to know. I mean, if you live with a mental illness, you have met someone either in your family or in your circle of friends who just doesn't want to know the facts about your mental illness. Once they learn that you live with such a condition, they just want to minimize their contact with you because they don't want their life to be affected by you. There's very little you can do with such people. You can try to educate them, but the best thing that you can do is just to remain proud and not to let them get you down. So between these two extremes of people who are very eager to have more information, more factual information about mental illness, and those who simply want to run away from it at any cost, that's what I call the grey area. And there are many, many people in this grey area. And I guess to describe them, the best thing I can come up with is they're people who simply don't know what to do. Now, I had such an experience this past week. As you know, I've written a book called The Overlife, A Tale of Schizophrenia, and there was someone in the town I'm living in, Alaska, at the moment, who was interested in seeing the book. However, she was clearly uncomfortable with the fact that in order to see the book, I would have to visit her, and I live with paranoid schizophrenia. So there was this kind of very awkward conversation on the telephone beforehand when I said, look, you've expressed interest in this book, and I would like to actually meet you personally and give you the book and have a conversation about it. I had the impression she would have preferred that I send the book through the mail. Let me put it like that. She was very nervous, but I insisted nonetheless that we made an appointment where I would see her in person. And I mentioned to her that due to the concussion that I'm still suffering from, so if you listen to my previous podcast, you know I banged my head and I have a bad concussion. Yeah, I mentioned to her that my husband will be driving me down to see her. And I hoped that that would make her feel that there would be someone with me and therefore that I would be in a supported situation. Now, my husband very wisely chose not to attend the interview between the two of us. He said, you know, you go in and you do your thing, you give her the book, you say what you want to say, and, you know, it's your deal. Well, everything actually went well. It was kind of like she was very nervous over the phone, but once she actually saw me and I'd gone to a certain amount of trouble to dress nicely and make sure that I had nice slacks on and a nice shirt or blouse over the top and that my hair was done nicely. And I brought with me several very positive book reviews about my book. You know, I mentioned to her that my book was on sale in Barnes & Noble. I mentioned to her that I had self-published the book with the help of Amazon.com and Ingram Spark, and therefore that I had been working with a lot of people on the material in the book. And so she realized, I think, that this book that I've written and my journey to write it was already interesting and accepted by lots of people. And I think that by mentioning all that, along with just giving her the book, made her feel less tense about the whole thing. I did also mention to her that it was Mental Health Awareness Month, and she's a liberal lady. She likes to think that she supports minorities, and I pointed out to her that people living with a mental illness are in a minority, and that the month of May, our present month, was a month, at least in the USA, devoted to recognizing them and furthering the understanding of how they live and how they can be understood better. So at the end of this, this lady, definitely in the grey area, was really happy that we'd had the conversation and was really happy to have my book. And I told her, you know, no pressure, don't feel you have to read it all at once. But, you know, here's my phone number if you do want to contact me again to ask me questions about it, or if you know of someone else who would like to read the book, you know, you can contact me and we can see about getting them another copy. Independently of this, my book is for sale in the local independent bookstore in the town I live in. There aren't many independent bookstores left in small towns, but in Homer, we have Homer, Alaska, which is where I am now. We have a very good one, and it's sitting on the shelf there for people to buy. And so that's kind of an example of someone who knew I live with paranoid schizophrenia because she'd heard about it and she'd heard about the fact that I'd written the book, but she still didn't feel comfortable even though she was interested. Now, within my family, I have had the full spectrum. Within family that is immediately related to me and that is related to me by marriage to my wonderful spouse, I have had the full range of reactions from complete rejection to, yes, I'm very interested to know what's going on, to great. But I would say that the predominant reaction has been in the grey area of, well, you know, I'm very awkward and have always been very awkward about the fact that you live with schizophrenia, but I don't want to reject you entirely. I just don't know what to do, you know, how to talk to you, how to make sure that I'm not affected by the bad sides of your condition. You know, when you have a schizophrenic episode, are you going to end up on my doorstep? What's going to happen? And I think the most frustrating thing I have found is the lack of willingness to talk to me directly. These family members have more wanted to talk to someone else in my immediate family, if it's my immediate family, or just to my spouse, if it's from my spouse's family. There's been very little willingness to talk to me directly. And even though I am the best source of information, they just don't want to confront me directly. Now, I did try to get around this by writing some emails and telling them about my book, but the success rate I had with that was very low. And I think, you know, people are often very, very hurt that their family or their family by marriage isn't more invested in getting to know them. But I think the reason is that they feel more vulnerable because they're closer to you. And so you live with a condition that they know nothing about, and they're frightened that somehow it will impinge on their life and put them in a situation that basically destroys their present lifestyle that they're very happy with. Thank you. So, you know, in my case, you know, my mother lived with paranoid schizophrenia, so there was a certain amount of understanding within my immediate family about the condition. But when it was clear that I was also suffering from paranoid schizophrenia, I met with rejection because they'd had enough of it with my mother. With my family by marriage, it was completely the opposite situation. They hadn't had any contact with anybody with paranoid schizophrenia, and the only thing they knew about it was what they'd seen on TV or whatever, and they were just frightened that via my husband that they would have to cope with something that they'd rather not cope with. Now here, again, emails and so on from me were not successful, even though they were good emails. But what has worked rather well is the conversations that they've had with my spouse. Because when his children call him and ask about him and so on and so forth, they often ask questions as to how I am. And he doesn't hold back. And he talks about my schizophrenia, and he talks very honestly about how I am. And he says that, you know, my wife is very much in the frame of mind that she has enough support from me, and she doesn't have any reason really to worry you or to seek contact with you. So that's kind of working rather well, but I cannot say that my husband's children understand schizophrenia. All I can say is that they have found a way not to be frightened of their father's spouse who lives with schizophrenia. It's way, way, way from ideal, but at least it's working for us relationship-wise. So, you know, stigma even though you may be totally in the right as a person who is a consumer of mental health, as we often call people who live with a mental illness, even though you may be totally in the right, you may totally understand your mental illness, you may be in a very good position to give accurate information and to recommend references, books that have been written, people that they can follow online and so on, to people who know you, they may simply not be prepared to go to the trouble because their overwhelming fear is that you will impinge on their life in some way and they won't be able to handle it. So you have to aim lower. I mean, you have to save the people who are receptive to a good education. I mean, you have to identify them and open up the world of knowledge as much as you can to people who are receptive to it. You have to stop worrying about the people who will never want to know anything about your mental illness. And the most difficult and the most delicate thing are the people in between, the grey area, where you have to find a way to communicate with them whereby they get some information and they need at least to feel that you're not going to go near them when they're not comfortable with it. So that, you know, they can kind of get information. So in my case, with my spouse's family, it's through my spouse. And gradually his kids are becoming more and more comfortable with the fact that he's married someone with paranoid schizophrenia. So you have to be a lot more subtle and a lot more hands-off and find a way that you can gradually get information to people in the grey area that puts them more at ease. And then if they want to, they will educate themselves more. You cannot force it. And unfortunately, you have to be prepared for disappointment. I mean, you have to be prepared for people that you know, but as soon as the topic of mental illness comes up, these very nice people are disappointingly rejecting of you. And that's just something you have to have in your arsenal as, okay, that's happened, disappointment, won't go there for a while, just leave this person alone and let me get back to the people who understand me better. So don't suffer fools gladly. Don't put yourself in a position, if you can help it, where you're in contact often with people who refuse to understand you. You're much better off putting that work into the people who want to be educated and the people in the grey area who want to be comforted and who just want to know that they can be part of your life without and that they can handle it. And that grey area is a two-way street. It's involves work on your part as well as work on the part of the other person. You have to get to know the person in the grey area well enough to know what you can expose them to and what you cannot expose them to. And it's really worth putting in the work because I have seen with my grey area relationships tremendous improvement since I've realized that I have to do a lot of the work and that I have to take into account where they are as well as where I am. So stigma can be a one-way street. Great when it is. Sometimes it's a dead end, which is always heartbreaking. But very often it's a two-way street and you need to travel it. Okay, that's all I have to say today. And as always, I thank you for listening and I do hope that you continue to follow this podcast and that you'll give some thought to purchasing my book, The Overlife, A Tale of Schizophrenia. A second book by me is coming out soon, and I'll have more to say about that later. Okay, then. Thank you for listening, and bye-bye.